Welcome, everybody, to another great episode of the Perceptive Podcast here on Game Wisdom, where we examine the art and science of games. Unfortunately, James couldn't make it to the cast this week, but we have a great discussion planned for you nevertheless. My guest tonight is returning fan of the site, as well as lead designer and owner of Positech Games. He is, of course, the designer behind titles such as Gratuitous Space Battles, and the upcoming game production line. Please welcome Cliff Harris.
Hello there, again.
Hey Cliff, it's great to have you back on. I think the last time we spoke was maybe a year, maybe a little bit over that ago.
Yeah, it seems a long time. I can't actually remember that far back, to be honest.
I know. I keep saying that I've lost all concept of time doing this and the YouTube channel, all that. Every year, I have no idea. I completely blank on what games came out that year. So it's always fun trying to think of what are my favorite games.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
So, how are things going with you and Positech?
Busy. Mm-hmm. Very stupidly busy, because we've released quite a lot of stuff recently. We did, I think since we chatted, we did Democracy 3 Africa. Mm-hmm. And also Political Animals, which I published for someone else. And then since then, we've kind of released production line into alpha with mm-hmm. pre-orders. And that's got really busy, because suddenly there's thousands of people playing it when I thought there would only be a few hundred or so. I'm suddenly besieged with requests and feedback and bug reports and mm-hmm. Stuff like that. So, yeah, very busy at the moment.
Yeah, and I sent you over, I did a spotlight video myself, a production line, and it's definitely interesting to see how things will go with that one. And we'll be talking more about production line and its design probably in the next few minutes. So, the first topic that I want to talk to you about, Cliff, and this is kind of like the big one that's circulating among indie developers over the last week or so, and for those of you listening to this cast, this should still be relatively timely, is, of course, the big announcement of Steam Direct. This is Valve's change in policy from Steam Greenlight, which allowed developers to put their game on Steam with, I think, a $100 fee, and then consumers would vote on what games they would like to see essentially get adopted onto the storefront. With Steam Direct, that is going away, and now developers will have to pay a fee which is recuperable between $100 or $5,000. At this time of this recording, which is mid-February, we don't know any more specifics than that, but the fee will be paid per game, and then the game will just be on the Steam store. There will be no voting, there will be no delay, stuff like that. And it's gotten a lot of developers very hot under the collar, I guess, say it mildly. And it's raising a lot of interesting discussions about being on Steam, and especially about being a developer and trying to sell your games that way. And I am sure that Cliff will not be the only developer we'll be talking to this year about that. But you have the honor of being the first one, I guess, with these podcasts. So my first question for you, Cliff, is, as someone who has done both developing games and you've, of course, gone with the publishing round of Positech, what do you think about these changes to Steam Direct?
It's an interesting one, actually, because quite a while ago now, maybe 2 years, mm-hmm. I was in a meeting at Valve with a bunch of developers when they kind of asked about whether or not they should do this. Mm-hmm. And I think pretty much everyone agreed that they should. Mm-hmm. We were sort of quite keen on it. There was a lot of joking about it as well. But I am in favor of it, actually. I know a lot of people I don't know if a lot of people are angry about it, but a very vocal sort of group of people are annoyed at it. Mm-hmm. But I quite like it, because, to be honest, there are a load of games on Steam that you look at and you think, oh my god, how did this get here? And how did that get through Greenlight? And the problem with Greenlight is that you have to get so many people to vote saying, I would buy this if it's on Steam. Mm-hmm. And anyone who's been through Greenlight will tell you that the votes are nonsense because, you know, if you get like 500 votes or whatever, I would buy this if it's on Steam. The minute it's on Steam, you would expect to sell that many copies, and that's just nonsense. It just doesn't happen. So I think what tends to happen is that people pester a lot of their friends, and they sort of give away copies and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And if you're very sociable, like PR kind of indie who knows loads of people, and say, please vote for me on Greenlight, you get through. But then you hardly ever sell any copies. There's a lot of games on Steam that you look at and you think, that has not earned $5,000.
And there have been reports, especially pieces over the last few years, about either individuals or smaller companies basically trying to throw their weight around, saying, you know, if you give us money, we'll vote for your game on Steam Greenlight and get on. And then someone was telling me about there has been some quick rich schemes regarding the Steam trading card front, and how we see a lot of budget games just released with tons and tons of cards, which, for those of you who don't know, whenever you do a trading card transaction on the Steam Marketplace, Valve gets a cut and the developer gets a cut. So they can release a game, make it like $2, $3, but have, you know, 30, 40 different cards. And even if those cards are only selling for 5 to 10 cents, they're still making money in just the sheer bulk that's being traded in and out, of course. All across Steam Marketplace.
But that kind of thing amazes me, because I can only imagine it happens with developers kind of in the developing world or whatever, because, you know, I get a royalty report every month from Steam, and I've got loads of games on there now. Mm-hmm. And the percentage of the income that you get from your commission on trading cards, it's just trivial. I don't even notice it, you know. So if I'm making, I don't know, like $20 a month or something, or $40 a month in commission on that, and that's with a load of games that are really popular. So you've got to be you're really desperately trying to game the system to get like $5 a month or something to do that. And that's the problem, because that kind of sort of edge case thing clutters up that marketplace with a load of kind of trashy games that, but they're basically, the problem is that it's a lot easier to make a really rubbish game now, because making your first game is very easy with Unity and stuff like that. And that never used to be the case. It used to be the case that if you made a sort of finished, shippable, playable game, it was probably pretty good, and it probably took you 6 months or a year or 2 years or whatever. And now that's changed, and that's why you end up with stuff like the App Store, and you end up with a huge flood of sort of low-quality games, I guess you'd say, on Steam. And I'm not surprised they're doing this. I'm surprised it took them so long. And most of the people I know who are like professional, kind of like full-time indies or very experienced developers who are going indie, they're all in favor of it. But obviously there's a lot more people who have a lot of time on their hands who would be against it. Because there's a load of people out there making their first game. But when I started, I mean, well, Steam didn't exist, but you never imagined that like your very first attempt at a video game would you know, get on the front page of a store like Steam. Obviously, it wouldn't happen.
And that's the point that a lot of the defenders of Steam Direct have been saying, that as we were saying before, the fee right now hasn't been determined yet, but they're aiming it to be either between $100 to $5,000. And the general consensus is that if you're going on Steam, this is pretty much the big leagues. And if you're going to be on a store like Steam, then we expect a certain measure of quality. And on Valve's point of view, they expect a certain measure of profits. Like, Steam isn't like your bargain warehouse or your bargain bin store. This is pretty much the premier gaming store when it comes to the PC these days. And if you want to put a game on there, it may only earn like $400 or $500. That may be your first game, but that's not really helping anyone else.
Yeah, I mean, there's loads of places to sell games. The mm-hmm. idea, the trouble is that a lot of developers don't kind of realize that, or they don't know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I had a blog post once, which was very popular for ages, saying how to sell your game without an app store.
Mm-hmm.
And it is actually really easy. I mean, itch.io make it very simple. The Humble widget is really, really simple.
Yeah.
To set up. That's what I'm selling. What I'm taking pre-orders for my latest game through. And there's other sites like FastSpring and BMT Micro. And you know, as long as you've got a bank account, and you can fill out a form, you can sell your game, and people will buy it. The idea that people won't buy a game if it's not on Steam.
Mm-hmm.
There are some people that do that, but Minecraft was never on Steam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's perfectly possible to do it. So the idea that like Steam are preventing indies without money from being on there. I mean, you know, put your game on one of these other sites. If it's a good game, you'll easily make the $5,000,
mm-hmm.
and you get that money back from Steam anyway. They're not suggesting for 1 minute that they take that as a fee.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be slightly different if they did suggest that. But it's basically you just having the kind of confidence to say, I have $5,000 worth of confidence in my sales on this platform. And really, you should be if you're going to try and sell a game and put your name to it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you just made a really good point there, Cliff, that there have been ways of selling your games outside of Steam. Of course, you mentioned the Humble Bundle, BitMicro. I'm sorry, what was that one?
It was a BMT Micro. BMT. Is a site I've used for many years, although I tend to use Humble now. But yeah. Yeah, they're very good. They're all, mm-hmm. all fairly similar and easy to set up. And it has to be said, if you put your game on somewhere like Steam or like GOG or mm-hmm. whatever, they take a much higher cut of your mm-hmm. money than if you sell it through like some widget.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I think it's worth it. I'm not complaining. But, you know, there's upsides to not going on Steam right at the start. And people should definitely try that. If you can't afford the $5,000, sell through someone else. You know, I think that's fine. And then when you do get a game on Steam, you'll agree with me.
Yeah. And the point that I was also going to make there is, as we were just saying, Cliff, that since, like, over the last few years, we have seen other alternatives to Steam come out. Of course, Humble Bundle, GOG, and I've been hearing some thoughts about this thing called Itch.io that I've been seeing a lot of smaller developers look at for releasing their games or distributing it.
Yeah, there's loads of options.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of like the point or one like the good things about, or one of the defenses of Steam Direct, that it is possible to sell your game. And as we've talked about multiple times on these casts and the discussions over on the YouTube channel, that most likely the cream will rise to the top. If, as you were saying earlier, Cliff, that if your game is outstanding, amazing, if we have, you know, a Stardew Valley or Her Story, whatever, then chances are it's going to do well with or without Steam. But obviously Steam is a huge deal in terms of that marketability and discoverability. And that kind of discussion, that's an easy 40-50 minutes in terms of the difficulty sometimes in terms of getting your game in front of the eyes of the consumer.
Yeah, but if your only sort of plan is I'll get my game on Steam
mm-hmm.
and then people will miraculously see it and buy it,
yes,
then you shouldn't be on Steam because you're screwed in other ways.
Yeah, definitely.
The $5,000 is the least of your problems if that's your plan.
Yeah, and that is a really good point. And it's one that I have talked about multiple times. I don't know if, I think we may have brought this up when you were last on, Cliff, about how a lot of smaller developers, especially those first time, really have struggled with the PR side of things. I spoke to a few other developers, my friend Z from Serenity Forge, about this as well. And you really need to understand marketing and PR if you want your game to be a success. As you were just saying, having your master plan be get on Steam, make tons of money, and that's it, is not really going to work. And especially if Steam Direct goes through with the larger end of the scale in terms of its fee, that it will probably be going away by the end of 2017.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the fee will end up being $1,000, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a bit of a guess.
Yeah. Now, I think I know what your answer is going to be to this, Cliff, but I won't ask this because it's another common criticism I've been hearing some indie developers say about Steam Direct. And one of the things I've heard from a lot of the smaller developers is that having any kind of fee for Steam Direct, be it $100, $1,000, $5,000, will stop or will put a severe hindrance on first-time developers and student developers, people, you know, who may be making their first game at college or through a game jam or stuff like that.
Yeah, but that's fine. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely fine. That's not a that's not a problem. Mm-hmm. It's like saying, I need to pay $5,000. Like, say you're an actor, mm-hmm. right? And it's like, I want to be in a Hollywood movie. And it's just laughable to think, oh, yeah, we can get you an audition for the next Tom Cruise movie, but you'll have to pay $5,000. Every actor in LA would, like, kill you to take that deal mm-hmm. and give you the money. And in practice, they do, mm-hmm. because you need a professional portfolio of photos, you need an agent, you mm-hmm. need a load of stuff in order to get to that point.
Yeah.
So what those guys do is they and girls do is they end up in commercials for rubbish, and they end up in like a sort of local rep theater and stuff like that, and they kind of like work their way up, mm-hmm. and that's perfectly normal, and it's normal in most industries. And if you think that like Walmart and these big places don't have some kind of stocking fee to initially mm-hmm. set up a new supplier, yeah. that it's everywhere and it's perfectly normal, and it has been very unusual to have mm-hmm. this route into Steam where you can just be a student with no money at all and then suddenly you're on Steam mm-hmm. because like everyone at school voted for your game. Mm-hmm. You know, that is unusual, and they've kind of done it backwards because they kind of let loads of you know, they've kind of done it the wrong way around. Mm-hmm. Because if before Greenlight, if you'd said, we're now going to allow anyone to be on Steam if they can like put up this $5,000, people would have loved that and said that, you know, that's really good. And back then, and I remember back then, when it was very hard to get on Steam, mm-hmm. if someone had said to me, you just have to put up $5,000, I wouldn't have thought twice. I'd go, yeah, here you go. This mm-hmm. is the profits from my earlier games.
Yeah.
Or a tiny amount of the profits from my earlier games. You know, it's like just the sort of professional developers with decent games, they've got the $5,000.
Yeah.
It is a bit of a problem if you're living in a country where, like, you don't have where the exchange rate and all that really screws you. But as I understand it, that's already catered for with the $100 fee for Greenlight. I'm not really sure the details because I've never been through Greenlight.
Yeah. I guess here's a question for you, Cliff, regarding that. With that kind of fee, as you were just saying, obviously when Steam was first around, I remember the same things as you. Like, I heard the stories of I need to know the guy who knew the guy who knew the guy at Valve in order to get my game on Steam. And with that kind of like fee itself, as we said, and as we talked about multiple times on these casts, there are definitely different scopes of being a game developer. I mean, over these last 4 years, I've lost track of time. I've spoken to developers in small studios. I've spoken to like 2 or 3 man development houses. You know, they have a virtual office. And I'm just wondering, in your opinion, when it comes to this kind of fee, do you think this fee should be a one size fits all? Like, it doesn't matter who you are, where you are, everyone gets one flat fee? Or do you think the fee should have some kind of basis on, like, the kind of game? Like, if someone wants to sell a 2-hour story-driven game, should they be charged the same fee as someone who's making a 30 to 60-hour massive RPG? Yeah.
Well, I mean, I would... I love playing the fantasy game. If I ran Steam, I would say, no, I don't care. You know, what it comes down to is... are you going to generate like $5,000 worth of sales mm-hmm. for this platform? Because if you're selling a game for $20, that's a different number of sales than if you're selling a game for $1.
Yeah.
I think I would be amazed if they vary it at all, mm-hmm. unless they do some sort of currency exchange thing.
Yeah.
Because you know, Valve don't want arguments with developers all the time because it's just tedious.
Yeah.
So you can imagine people going, oh, but my game's this genre, so I should pay this fee, or my game's this lot. And who determines how long a game is?
Oh, goodness, yes.
What genre it is? It's like, no, it's... The thing is, this is a lot more public than it normally is. I mean, you know, all industries have situations like this, and they're normally kind of like, you know, behind the scenes and not really open for debate, really. I mean, you know, if Steam got the fee really wrong, then loads of developers would go to their competitors and they'd lose money. So it's in their interest to make a sensible decision. Mm-hmm. But it's the internet and it's game developers and it's gamers. Yeah. So the conversation will get rowdy and it will go on for months, and then in a year everyone will forget all about it.
Yeah, and speaking about like that kind of measuring games and stuff, I would not want that job to like appraise video games to say, oh, your game is 5 hours, well, then it should only be this amount of money. Oh, you want a 1 hour novel game? Then you must charge this amount. That would go over.
Nobody at Steam wants that job either, which is why they're trying to do this.
Mm-hmm. Now, another part that I just want to get your opinions on, Cliff, regarding Steam Direct. I'm trying to remember the exact criticism that I heard. Thankfully, this is being recorded, so hopefully I can edit this part out, but we'll see. let me see. What was it about? Let me see about the fee. Getting on there. Oh, now I remember what I was going to say. The other part that people have been complaining or in terms of criticism about Steam Direct has been about what benefits this will have. Now, as we mentioned a few minutes ago, we brought up about how there have been developers who have been releasing shovelware, you know, asset flipping, the like 30 cent a dollar games that just, they may only have like 20 minutes of content, that's it. And one of the things that we've been reading about with Steam Direct is that this is an attempt at curving that behavior, because if there is a fee per game, then you can't be releasing a 75 cent game that's only going to flood the store if you have to pay $1,000 each time for it. And critics have been saying they're not sure if that will really stop this, if Steam Direct has that fee, if it will stop those asset flips and those bargain bin games. What do you think about it? Do you think that it will have an impact?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's exactly what it's aimed at. Mm-hmm. And I think it will. You don't get money just by being on Steam. Mm-hmm. You know, people don't accidentally buy your game. and if they do, they can refund it. Mm-hmm. And you don't get the money then, you know. So it's harder to sell games on Steam than people think it is. Mm-hmm. And what you have to remember is that once you put a game on Steam, there's really no incentive for you to remove it.
Yeah.
So there could be loads of games on there that have sold like 2 copies.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're like an asset flip thing.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And, you know, if they haven't sold enough copies to show up on Steam Spy, nobody knows how many copies they've sold. Obviously Valve know. And so they have that information. They can look at the games that they think, we wish we'd never let this on here. They can look at how much money that developer earned from that game. And I bet you it's a lot less than $1,000. But the thing is, people copy other people. They see their game on there and they think, wow, that sold some copies, no doubt. And like, if you live in a country where like $10 is a decent amount of money or $100 is loads of money, then you think, oh, let's do that. But it doesn't mean any of these games are profitable. And to be honest, I think a sort of $200 fee would take care of a lot of them. $1,000 will take care of, I think, most of them. Mm-hmm. And I know loads of people are saying it won't, but we'll see. I mean, they can always change the fee.
Yeah. And as we said at the start of this cast, Valve can be sometimes infamous for changing their minds and changing details as they look into research or as time goes on. And I'm going to bet that, as I said, we're recording this in mid-February. By the time, as I said, I think spring of 2017, there's a good chance that things could be changed or they may reveal more information. And while you were talking, Cliff, regarding how many games are on Steam, I just did a quick Google on that, and according to an article in Forbes in 2014, there was 781 million registered games on Steam, and that was in 2014. And I think I agree with you that I'm very sure that all those millions of games, there's probably a few of them that didn't make $5,000 in sales.
Yeah, there must be. So, yeah, I think they're probably getting it about right.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that you probably have to get going in like 20 minutes or so. And, I mean, again, we could probably sit here and chat all day long. But I do want to get to Production Line, and I'm sure we can certainly have you back on when, who knows, whenever we have time. But there is one final part or one final question I have regarding Steam Direct for you, and then we'll move on to our next topic.
Okay.
When we talk, or when the announcement was made about Steam Direct, Valve made it clear that a lot of these changes are going to be aimed at new developers. Again, the people who aren't already on Steam. And this was something that I was thinking about when I made my post, which would probably be last week, or maybe a little, or 2 weeks before, by the time you were listening to this cast. And my question was, at what point should a developer be on Steam? Like, at what point should, like, if I release, let's say, 4 or 5 amazing games, they've all sold over 5,000 copies, should I then essentially, you know, get my Steam membership club? Should I essentially be on the platform and not have to worry about this fee? And for you, Cliff, again, as someone who has developed multiple games, and of course you have your games on Steam with exceptions to Production Line right now, what do you think about that in terms of should there be like a recognition point or like a club membership point once you've made enough money on Steam?
I think there should, and I know that there is. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I'm in that club. you know, I know that because, I mean, I've sold a lot of games. I don't know how many. It's probably about 1 million. Mm-hmm. It's a lot anyway. Oh, well, no, I can look. It's well over 1 million. And, yeah, if you sold a crazy number of games, then you just get app IDs mm-hmm. where you can just create a new game and publish it. And I don't know what level you have to get at to meet that, but I know it's not a million games; it's a lot less than that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the idea that kind of, you know, I don't know that, like Introversion, their new game, they're not going to have to pay $1,000 to list it, and mm-hmm. I'm sure when, because I'll be putting Production Line on there quite soon, mm-hmm. and yeah, they're not going to ask me for the fee for that. And yeah, they're perfectly reasonable. I mean, like, if you're making games that people are enjoying and buying and everyone's happy, then obviously they don't want a load of admin nonsense with mm-hmm. fees with you and everything. So yeah, it's not a concern, I don't think.
Okay, cool. And like I said, we could spend who knows how many hours they discussing this, and it's still relatively early. So hopefully when we hear more details, I would definitely love to have you back on, Cliff, and we can talk about things further. But like I said, you do have to get going in a few minutes, and I definitely want to touch on your latest game before you leave. So as I said at the start, Cliff is currently working on Production Line, which, from what I've spent playing it, it feels basically like similar to Big Pharma, but replace the pharmaceutical industry with the automotive. So I'm going to, I guess, toss somebody over to you, Cliff. For people listening to this cast right now, what is Production Line about?
It's basically run a car factory.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of pitch of it, I think. But essentially, in design terms, what it's designed to appeal to people who like efficiency
mm-hmm.
and who like optimization.
Mm-hmm.
And I always try and design games that I would really love to play but don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'm at heart, I'm a programmer, and I'm especially a kind of sort of fairly low level programmer that does a lot of kind of like optimized stuff and multi-threaded stuff. I spend a lot of my day looking at kind of like charts of speeds and lots of numbers and stuff like that. And the process of optimizing computer programming is strangely addictive because you always have a bottleneck in the code.
Mm-hmm.
that is making everything else slow and chasing it. And you can never beat it. All you can do is move it. So you could just move that bottleneck around and make the whole thing faster, but there's always a bottleneck. And it kind of occurred to me that any kind of long, complicated production line is going to be the same. So I read a load of books about car factories and the original Model T Ford factory, which is a fascinating story, and books about kind of like modern theory of how this stuff is done and all the different ways to do it. And production line is essentially it's kind of gamifying that slightly OCD thing people have when they go, if I just move this here and add one of those and upgrade that a little bit, then that will be 0.12% more efficient. But with nice graphics and animated robots and shiny cars. But that's kind of like the big picture of it. And you don't have to care about cars. I never used to care about cars. It's basically, you know, lay out a factory in a sort of isometric view. And it's kind of part kind of factory design game and part business simulation, although the business simulation stuff isn't as fleshed out yet as it will be eventually. So, yeah, it's Car Factory Tycoon, effectively.
And as I was saying, it reminded me a lot of Big Pharma, which was a game that you published a few years ago. Did Big Pharma kind of give you the inspiration to do Production Line?
Well, it's funny. I mean, it really... It didn't really, but the funny thing is, because originally when I started doing it, it was actually a side-scrolling game, believe it or not, and then it ended up a top-down game. It was influenced a lot more by Prison Architect, actually, and I was all very happy to make it a top-down game. And then the problem is, if you look at a car from above, it looks really boring. And you can't really tell it's a cool car. So an isometric view just looks nicer. So I switched it to that. And then Tim, who's the designer of Big Pharma, was saying that the artist that he used on that was like available and looking for work. And he said, you should use him, which I have. So it's the same artist. So it looks a lot more influenced by Big Pharma than it is. But it's... I think it's quite different to play because it's a lot more fiddly and a lot more granular than Big Pharma. Big Pharma's more of a very clever puzzle game in some ways, with a solution that you can set out, and then like you have a perfectly optimized factory. You can have perfect optimization in Big Pharma. You can never have it in Production Line. It's just a matter of how close can you get.
Yeah. And for my play, it's definitely going to be a very interesting title in terms of, again, getting to that point of min-max mastery. And for myself, I grew up playing the JRPG genre, the very mechanic-heavy RPGs, where it is about figuring out the best combination of equipment, best combination of skills. And that's where I kind of fell in love with that kind of min-maxing. For those of you who are fans of the podcast listening, you know that I love, like, those old school, like, those party-based RPGs. Stuff like Etrian Odyssey, Bravely Default, where it is just about saying, I have this, 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 and this. How do I make this the best I can? How do I fit all these, you know, square pegs into round holes, in a matter of speaking?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly the kind of... the kind of appeal that we want, that kind of, you know, how can I optimize this? The whole min-maxing thing, which I absolutely love as well. It's also slightly influenced by games like Adventure Capitalist, which is a very stupid and pointless game, but which is basically just a game of clicking on things and numbers going up. But deciding what to click next is actually quite technical. And also, I quite like games that are based on real-world problems. And frankly, if you can lay out a car factory that makes your car 5% faster or cheaper than the other guy, then you make billions of dollars.
Yes.
So, like, it's a real-world thing that people – that really matters. You know, and this does happen. You know, I love the really deep optimization and the obsession that people take to such games like Factorio.
Oh, yes.
And SimCity. You know, I've got so lost in SimCity and Factorio and games like that over the years. So I'm really enjoying working on one that pushes the same kind of buttons.
Mm-hmm. Now, for my frame of reference, Cliff, I'm sure people are wondering this. When did you start working on Production Line?
A very long time ago, and I didn't mention it at all to anybody. And because it was not 2016, but 2015 that I started working on it. Because in 2016, around about February or March, I went to America and I went to the Henry Ford Museum.
Mm-hmm.
And also went on a factory tour of a Ford truck factory, actually, out there. Specifically because I wanted to go to like a Detroit car factory,
mm-hmm.
which is like the epitome of like how cars are made, you know. Mm-hmm. And I've been working on it for a long time already then. So I don't have a definitive date, but a lot longer than people think. Mm-hmm. And also it was funny because like I worked on it in secret for quite a while. And I remember when I was at GDC saying to people, oh, you know, I'm going to Detroit on the way home. Everyone was saying, why would you go to Detroit? You're on holiday. Why are you going to Detroit? And it's like, hopefully now. Like, it's like, well, I was making a game about cars. Obviously, that's why I went to Detroit, you know. So, it's been in my mind for a long time. And I've been doing sort of bits of work on it for a long time. So it's only recently that I've kind of admitted to what I've been working on all this time.
It reminds me of when I was speaking to a podcast guest, I think it was earlier in September, who was, I think, in New York, and he said, I'm going to go take a break. I'm going to visit New Jersey. And everyone was like, why are you going to New Jersey? And he was like, he wanted to really meet Bruce Springsteen over here.
Okay.
So I don't think he was doing research on a video game for that one, but you never know where you end up sometimes when you come over here for a break.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it was actually quite convenient because, mm-hmm. like if I go to, it was a Steam thing. So it was Seattle. So if you go to Seattle and mm-hmm. then go back to London, you can do it quite efficiently through Detroit. So it wasn't too bad.
Now, obviously, as we're talking, the game is still very early in development. For those listening to this cast right now, Cliff, what is, I guess, like the current version of Production Line?
Well, it's in alpha, I think we're version 1.09.
Okay.
So there's been like 9 little updates since I started taking pre-orders for it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing a similar thing to what Prison Architect did.
Mm-hmm.
So if you pre-order the game now, and it's $11 now, it was $10 initially. I put it up a whole dollar. So the idea is like you pre-order it now, obviously you get all the updates, and if when it goes on Steam, hopefully, you know, we get loads of keys from Steam and mm-hmm. give out Steam keys. But you get to play it straight away. And obviously it is in alpha and there's a lot of stuff that is finished. There's a lot of, like the user interface looks fairly ugly and the music isn't final and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, it's playable and a lot of people have sunk enormous amounts of time into it already. I have massive, massive sprawling car factories sent to me. From people saying they found some obscure bug when they've like, you know, made $200 million and sold however many thousand cars. And I think, wow, yeah, I've never managed to play it that long without having to do some work. So, it's perfectly playable and all the rest of it. And quite a few people are playing it now. And there's, you know, there are people doing Let's Plays of it and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And one of the things that we're doing that I don't think I've ever seen anyone do, but maybe they have done it, is that on our forums, we're having like a vote, like a poll on our forums every 2 weeks saying, what should I work on next?
Mm-hmm.
So should I be optimizing it? Should I be building a bigger tech tree? Should I be adding this feature? Should I be improving that feature? And that's really handy because, you know, gamers love to point out what they think could be improved.
Yes. So, as you were just saying, Cliff, for right now, people can, of course, buy the game through your site and will eventually go on Steam. Do you have any rough idea of when it will be available on Steam, or not this time?
I'm hoping probably March or something like that. I mean, I want to do the early access thing on Steam. Mm-hmm. So I'll be working on it for a long time until I declare it, you know, done.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, GDC is coming up and I go away to go to GDC. So I wanted to get that out of the way before I worried about the kind of admin of like putting it on Steam's early access. Because I've been kind of a little bit swamped. I thought just a few hundred people would play it, but actually everyone seems to have pre-ordered it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got fairly busy. So I would say sometime towards the end of March, I'd like to have it on Steam in early access. Mm-hmm. I think that should be doable.
All right. Do you have a rough idea of when production line will be done or no?
No idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, if there's loads of ideas and I'm not sick of it and I'm not completely burned out and stressed, then I can imagine keeping working on it for a long time. Mm-hmm. Because I'm really enjoying working on it, but there comes a point with any game when it's just like, I need to work on something else now. But that's a long way off. So yeah, I'm going to work on it for quite a while, I think.
Awesome. I know you have to get going in the next few minutes. And again, we could probably sit here all day and chat. So I guess we will begin to wrap things up. Before we go, Cliff, is there anything regarding Production Line that we didn't bring up that you would like to mention to the folks listening right now?
I don't think so. I'm very interested in this whole experiment of like asking people who are playing it what the developer should concentrate on.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very interesting because it's, you know, we have no idea otherwise, because what we end up doing is working on stuff that's either easy to work on, mm-hmm. or we find interesting to work on. Yeah. Whereas obviously gamers have different ideas. So if anyone listening to this like does pre-order it, then make sure you vote on that poll, because I check it every day.
Awesome. All right. I think with that, I am about out of questions, unless we want to jump onto some other topic for the next 30, 40 minutes. So, so I will let you go for tonight. And again, it would be great to catch up with you again, Cliff, either closer to when Production Line is onto early access or when we know more about Steam Direct and we can discuss these the topics even further.
Yeah, that would be good. That would be excellent.
All right. So with that said, for those of you listening, I'm sorry this is going to be a shorter cast, but I think we had a great discussion. And again, with Steam Direct, it's still very early in terms of its announcement. It's been about, by the time you're listening to this cast, it'll probably be about 3 weeks since the actual official Steam Direct announcement. And we still have a few months before things go into action. And it will be very interesting as going forward, talking to more developers on these casts, to see what they think about Steam Direct and such. But for tonight, we're going to wrap things up. Again, Cliff, it was a pleasure hanging out with you today. Best of luck with Production Line, and I can't wait to dive further into it in the coming weeks.
Excellent. Thank you.
Not a problem. So for those of you listening, we're going to end things here. As always, if you'd like to support Game Wisdom and what we do, there are several options available. If you'd like to be a guest for a podcast, live discussion, or write a guest piece for the site, be sure to get in touch with me under Submissions Wanted on the front page. You can send me an email, josh@game-wisdom.com. We are always looking for new people to talk to, and we can certainly talk about just about anything video game or game design related. Be sure to follow me on Twitch and Twitter under GWBicer for updates and to catch out our nightly streams. And, of course, there is our ever-growing Game Wisdom YouTube channel where you'll find a collection of daily Let's Plays and discussions of all manner of game design topics. As of this moment, we are over 1,200 subscribers and it looks like we're still growing. So be sure to look at that. And last but not least, be sure to check out the updated Patreon campaign. You can find us all on Patreon under GWBicer or Game Wisdom, where you'll see new goals and rewards to add more content for everyone to enjoy. There's also that little banner on the front page as well. So with all that said, thank you so much for listening to this week's Perceptive Podcast. Be sure to check out Production Line from Positech. And if there's interest in seeing me play more of the game on the YouTube channel, be sure to let me know. So again, Cliff, thank you so much for coming on, and you have a great rest of the week.
Thank you.
Yep. And for those of you as well, have a great rest of the week, and we'll talk to you next time. Take care.